Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's episode on Thursday, the 28th of August. Coming up, a popular shop in Rochester reopens just 2 days after a suspected arson attack, and a mum describes her battle to get her baby diagnosed with a life-changing condition. But first, a council office building in Sittingbourne has been cordoned off by police. This is our most read story on the website today, and reporter Joe Crosley has been along to the scene and joins me now. Joe, thanks ever so much for being on the episode. What's it like there at the moment?
So the first thing you'll see is just lots of police tape around Swale Council building, which is called Swale House, and that's in East Street, right in the heart of Sittingbourne Town Centre. There's a couple of police officers there, but other than that, relatively quiet. We've been told by people walking past early this morning around about 3:45 that there were 3 police cars there and that they were still taping up the scene.
So, Joe, tell us a bit more about this part of Sittingbourne then and where the building is. It's very central, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, as I say, right in the heart of the town. East Street is full of businesses. So you've got a couple cafes, you've got a pie shop, you've got literally next to it a school uniform shop, and then it literally leads up into the high street, where you've got loads of businesses, obviously. It's also sort of a cross section, so there's Bell Road as well, which is a key road that runs right through the town.
And as far as that building itself is concerned, just describe it to us. It's really just a typical office block looking building.
Sure, yeah, it's actually pretty huge. It's a large building. The part that's actually taped off is not the actual offices themselves. So there were still council workers going in this morning when I was down there. The actual part that's closed off is the almost underground section. It's sort of almost on stilts, if you think of it like that. And officers were down there at the time. The car park, which sits opposite Snap Fitness Gym, is also cordoned off. Yeah, as I say, it's quite a large building. It's really recognisable and really prominent in the town.
Joe, thank you ever so much. A spokesman for the council has told us police are investigating an incident that took place in the car park of Swale House last night. We'll bring you any updates to that story on Kent Online and in tomorrow's episode of the podcast.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories, and a man's died after collapsing in Gillingham High Street, sparking a huge emergency response. Police taped off an area near Sports Direct on bank holiday Monday night, and forensic investigators were also spotted. It was described at the time as a serious incident. A delivery driver from Sevenoaks who claimed benefits he wasn't entitled to has been jailed. A court heard Paul Churchman lied about his job and health in order to obtain almost £250,000 over 11 years, despite earning more than £400,000. The 49-year-old from Swansea Road has been locked up for 3 years. His wife was given a suspended jail term. A man who fled the country after grooming and abusing a young teenager at his flat in Kent has been jailed. A court heard Akko Hawler had targeted the girl on various social media platforms and apps and was tracked down in France. The 26-year-old from Frobisher Road in Erith has been locked up for 13 years. A hearing's been told a 4-year-old boy died after running out into the road before being struck by a bus in Margate. It happened outside the QEQM hospital earlier this month, shortly after Zahir Jan Faizi had been to visit his nan. An inquest into his death has been opened and adjourned. Now, a Sittingbourne mum has told the podcast how basically it took her having a breakdown in an A&E ward to find out that her daughter has a life-changing condition. Morgan Austin from Tenham gave birth to baby Matilda in January and was told that she was suffering from reflux. But after repeated visits to doctors, she was eventually diagnosed with cerebral palsy. The 27-year-old has been sharing her story and explained how she just knew something wasn't right. Morgan's been chatting to reporter Joe Crosley.
After being misdiagnosed with reflux for about 5 months, I went to A&E and it basically took a breakdown of me crying and saying I can't cope anymore, this is just too much. She was screaming in pain all day and all night. I said, this isn't reflux, something's wrong, this isn't normal, and I'm fed up of being told I'm a first-time mum and this is normal when I know it's not. So the doctor, for the first time, examined her physically and said, yeah, her reflexes aren't where we would expect them to be. She's very stiff. And in the arch of the back, that's quite sort of abnormal. It is a symptom of reflux, but it could be something else going on neurologically. So we're going to arrange an MRI scan and some ultrasounds, and we're going to admit you and see where that takes us. So we had the MRI scan done. Those results got referred to Evelina Children's Hospital in London because they discovered she did have a bleed on the brain. And we got blue-lighted to Evelina, where we spent 2 weeks there doing a bunch of tests. And that's when they diagnosed her with dystonia, which was the arch of the back, not reflux, and significant white matter damage. Cerebral palsy then wasn't something that was spoken about because she was 4 months old at the time. They couldn't diagnose that. But at 6 months old, she was diagnosed with cerebral palsy.
Kind of fast forwarding now to today, you are under the care of NHS, but basically you've told me that what you've been offered isn't enough because you want to make sure that she has a chance to be able to walk and those motor skills can build up. Can you just talk to me a little bit about that decision to now raise the money so you can then afford those extra sessions?
So the part of the brain that is damaged is to do with her motor skills, so the ability to use her arms and legs. She is very stiff everywhere. She cannot play with toys and sort of use her motor skills in the way that a normal baby would at this age. So I have been told that physiotherapy is key, really, especially the first 2 years of life. And the neuroplasticity is so important for a baby. So the NHS, they offer what they can, but it isn't enough. I haven't seen them for 3 months now, and she needs physiotherapy multiple times a day. We do have a physiotherapy room at home that I do with her, but it's still very expensive to go private and see those sort of people that she needs. Ideally, she would need, you know, physiotherapy multiple times a day, every day, but that it's just impossible to fund that. So we do take her once a week to a private physiotherapist, and then I do everything they teach me at home to give her the best chance. But the cost of that is just too much, especially with me being on maternity leave still. And still bills to pay and our mortgage to pay. It's very tough.
Having a baby, you know, must have been something you were so looking forward to. Mm. And I'm not saying that it's not been, you know, that experience for you. But it's out with all the hospital appointments and stuff. What sort of toll has that taken on you as a mum?
A lot. It's taken a lot on our relationship as well. Obviously, no one wants to be in this boat. And you never expect, you know, the child you bring in, especially where you have a fairly straightforward pregnancy. You never expect this to happen to you, and my heart goes for anyone going through a similar thing to me. Being a parent is hard as it is, but then having, you know, a child with a disability is, and really sort of complex needs, is really, really difficult. And it's the unknowing of the future, what their future is going to hold, and you want the best for your child. You would pay anything, you would do anything, you would try anything, but it's being able to access those resources and finding the money.
As you heard there, little Matilda needs regular physiotherapy. We've shared a link to the fundraising page Morgan set up within the story at Kent Online. It can find it by heading to the Sitting Bourne pages to read the story in full.
Kent Online reports.
A cyclist is in a serious condition in hospital following a crash near Maidstone. Police say the bike he was riding was involved in a collision with a white van on the A229 Linton Road near Lewes at around 5:30 yesterday morning. The road was closed near the junction with Rosemount Close for investigation work. Hundreds of people were expected today at the funeral of a four-year-old boy who died in a crash in Southfleet. Peter Morn was killed when the car he was in was involved in a collision with another vehicle on New Barn Road in June. Mourners at the service in Dartford have been asked to wear baby blue and lemon. Two men who were related to Peter have been charged with murder. A road in Canterbury has been cordoned off after a six-foot-deep sinkhole opened up. Engineers were called to Watling Street near the Three Tons pub yesterday evening. It's thought to have been caused by a collapsed sewer. Now, police have told the podcast they won't be arresting anyone for putting up flags in public places across Kent. You may have noticed that union flags have appeared on lampposts in recent days, while roundabouts and other road markings have been spray-painted to look like St George crosses. Now, while some people say it's all very patriotic and something to be proud of, others are concerned they're being put up to make foreign people feel unwelcome. Well, we've been getting reaction to this. First, let's hear from Kent County Council leader Lyndon Kemp-Caron, who's from Reform UK.
I think it's a wonderful thing if you want to put your national flag up wherever you are, in your garden, you know, on the street outside. I think it's an absolutely fantastic thing. I think in Britain, we've gone a little bit crazy in the last few years. We're probably the only country I can think of where it could be considered a bad thing to display your national flag. I am the daughter of an immigrant, and when my father came to this country back in the 1960s, he was incredibly proud to become a full British citizen, and any display of the flag would have made him feel incredibly welcome and proud to be British. Because of course, if you emigrate to another country, you should want to integrate and you should want to celebrate all that is great about that nation that you have chosen to make your home.
And Lucy has been chatting to Kay Marsh from refugee charity Samfire in Dover. She disagrees.
Well, it's xenophobia dressed up as patriotism, as nationalism, isn't it? There is nothing outwardly bad about being proud of your country or indeed flying your flag, except if you're doing it to intimidate other people, that's where the problems lie.
Do you think it's sort of, is it a far-right sort of movement, do you think, that is that concerning for you and the people you work with?
It certainly comes across as such. As I say, the widespread nature of it, there is nothing outwardly wrong with flying the flag of your country and being proud of where you're from. But when we're taking it to such extremes and, you know, plastering entire towns in the St George's Cross with the sole purpose of intimidating people who come from elsewhere, it's not right.
Well, we've had statements through as well. KCC say they'll only remove flags or markings from highways infrastructure if they pose a safety risk. They're also urging people not to put their personal safety at risk by climbing lampposts or structures to display flags. Meantime, Medway Council say people are free to fly these and other flags on their own property, subject to legislation. However, as with fly posting and illegal advertising, we do not allow any unauthorised items to be attached to street furniture, such as lampposts and street signs, or for road markings to be defaced.
Kent Online reports.
A popular shop in Rochester has reopened 2 days after a suspected arson attack. The door in front of Get Ready Comics on the High Street was badly damaged when a floral arch outside was reportedly set alight early on Tuesday morning. It was all caught on nearby CCTV and an investigation is underway. Well, I've been chatting to Paul Blakeborough, who runs the store.
I have my phone on silent because I really like sleep. And I woke up at about 6:30 in the morning to multiple missed calls and messages from people that were on their way to work, from the fire brigade and the police. We attended the shop pretty much around 7 a.m. and the fire started at 5. So by the time we arrived, the fire was out. The fascia of the building was pretty destroyed.
I'm sure loads of people have seen the pictures, but just describe what happened. So there was a beautiful floral arch outside because your shop always looks so wonderful. And essentially, yeah, that was set on fire and then that's damaged the front of the shop. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. Without going into too much detail, because there's an ongoing police investigation, a person walks down the road and users come some kind of fire lighter to put into both sides of the flowers to spark and ignite a fire on both sides, which essentially saw both sides go up in flames. The videos of it to see are quite harrowing, knowing it's our shop. But it's been one of those things that have been very difficult to see and experience and see the pictures and videos. We've been really lucky with the local community because they've their outreach and the people that live opposite us had the people that live opposite us not phoned that in to the fire brigade, the situation could have been fundamental. I can't even begin to imagine the consequence of what could have happened.
So just 2 days later, you've been able to reopen, which is incredible. You've got another entrance to the shop that visitors are able to come through. What is the shop like today?
It's we've had a few people in so far that want to have a look. They want to see what's happened. They want to see if there's any damage and just come to send their best wishes, really. The outreach from the community on social media and from the local community has been, it's beyond anything we could have ever hoped for or imagined, to be honest. It's crazy how well thought of and well loved we are in the community. And it takes something like this to potentially realise it. I don't think we realised it until we've seen the outreach, the GoFundMe, and all the feedback and the comments. It's really nice. It's very humbling. And it's kind of helped us get through the last 48 hours to read those comments and messages. As we've replied to pretty much everyone, it's very humbling, but extremely rewarding. And it's good to know that what we do has a place in the community and in people's hearts.
Absolutely. You mentioned the GoFundMe there. I mean, that very, very quickly has raised over £2,000 for you guys. I mean, that's incredible, isn't it? And it was a customer who set that up, someone who just loves the shop.
Yeah, Lauren is a good friend. I met her doing a Make-A-Wish event. So we have equal beliefs in the way that we look after people and we want to give back to the community. And she's done that off her own back, and her energy and passion for what she does and how she treats people is kind of matches our energy. And when something like that happens, it's a really nice thing to see.
Obviously, you've got a very prominent shop in the high street. You moved to the newer building. How long is it going to take to repair the front and get it back to looking its glorious best again? Because it is one of the highlights down Rochester High Street.
Yeah, I mean, this is the bit that kind of makes me really sad. The building was obviously built in 1981. So a lot of the fixtures and fittings and the fascia were the original. So the door's a custom made door, the fittings and boxing at the top is all custom made. So it's going to take, I'd say, just under a month maybe. And the repair costs are well into the thousands of pounds, because it'll all be the lead crown, the crown molding across the top is all melted. And it's not an area I understand, but we're working with some just incredible people. Sanjay from the City Wall has been amazing, his support and his network of people that he knows to put on hand to give us some support. And that's when I talk about community. We're very lucky in the community that we're in Rochester, that we have a very supportive group of people.
Police have told us the incident happened between 5 and 5:25 a.m. on Tuesday. They're urging anyone with the information to call 01634 792209. That's 01634 792209. You can quote the reference 46/148526/25. That's 46/148526/25. 26/25. Residents with private CCTV and any motorists with dash cam footage are also asked to check for relevant footage. People living near Ashford say they've had to keep windows closed for a week as a fire involving a large pile of manure continues to smoulder. Crews were first called to Brockman's Lane on August the 22nd and say the heap has been left to burn in a controlled manner. Residents on the nearby Bridgefield housing estate say it's become unbearable. The council have told us they're aware of the situation and are liaising with the fire service. Plans have been put in to convert an abandoned building in Folkestone into a so-called HMO. Developers want to create a 9-bed house of multiple occupation in a former office space in Cheriton Place. It comes just weeks after proposals were revealed for another HMO above a dry cleaners in nearby Sandgate Road. Plans have been put in meantime to revamp a school near Sittingbourne after it was devastated by fire. A blaze broke out in the roof space of Rodmersham Primary in October 2023. Proposals include a single-storey extension with a new classroom and staff area, while the current building would be refurbished. And the people who run a branch of a Japanese and Korean-inspired food business in Ashford have opened their second premises. Kokoro started in the high street in April and now has a trailer at the town's designer outlet on a six-month trial. The businessmen say it's going well so far and they plan to stay in the town long-term.
Canton
Online Sport.
Just some tennis news today, and Kent's Emma Raducanu says she's looking to build on progress every day as she continues her strong run at the US Open. She's through to the third round after beating Indonesian qualifier Janice Chen in straight sets. Speaking after the match, the British number one from Orpington says her game has improved a lot in the last year.
First of all, the consistency of doing good practice days every day, building on that. I think after Miami, I did some really good work. I started to do it, but then I also feel in the last few weeks I've really kind of stepped up with what I'm doing on and off the court, and I'm really happy that I have those people in my corner over there, and I'm really grateful for them. So I'm just looking forward to building day by day, doing my best. That's all I can do, and I think that now I'm putting a lot of trust in the work I'm doing behind the scenes, so it kind of takes a little bit of pressure off. But at the same time, whenever you play a match on a big stadium, you feel a bit of pressure, but I like to try and use it as much as I can.
And she'll play Kazakhstan's Elena Rybakina tomorrow. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget you can follow us on socials, plus you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the website, you can also sign up to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. And if you use the promo code Nicola Everett, all one word, at the checkout, you'll get £30 off the price of an annual subscription.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.